The following programming is sponsored by Rich Gorlick. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Live from the new WWDB AM Talk 860 studios in Philadelphia, this is Unexpected Goals. I'm Rusty.
And I'm Rich.
And you give us 1 hour, we'll give you the entire soccer world. As always, there is a ton of soccer to talk about.
Especially today.
Especially today. Certainly not a slow news day today, but leading off, possibly the most important thing, we're kidding, but the Olympic soccer tournament is history. Congrats to the U.S. women's national team for winning a bronze medal and to the Canadian women's national team for shocking the world and bringing home the gold.
So hard to say shocking the world because Canadian and the gold was not something you would have guessed at before.
No, yeah, exactly. No, I would not have. Also, congratulations to the Brazilian men's team for winning the gold and to the legendary Dani Alves for winning a gold medal to complete his run where he won everything else he could possibly win in a career spanning over 20 years. I think this is his 41st trophy.
I think so. Amazing. I mean, Copa Americas and Champions Leagues and La Liga titles
everything. I think a Liga and a Scudetto or two.
Right.
Yes.
Just one of the all-timers.
Anyway, the huge story, probably the biggest in over a decade, easily the biggest since Neymar, maybe the biggest transfer story ever, is that Barcelona could not afford, but also just could not register Lionel Messi if they decided to keep him, despite Messi wanting to stay at Camp Nou. And the result is that Messi bowed a teary farewell to the Barcelona faithful and recovered quickly enough to sign with, you guessed it, PSG to further add to the firepower of that squad, making it a favorite to win the Champions League and a favorite to win Ligue 1 by probably around 25 points. We'll talk about what this means for PSG, for Messi, for Barcelona, for the game as a whole.
What do they call later. That in FIFA when you get the cards? And what do they call
Ultimate
that?
Team?
The Ultimate Team.
Yes.
PSG is an Ultimate Team.
Yes, PSG are playing Ultimate Team right now, absolutely. And then transfer season has been getting hot and heavy. And there are 3 weeks to go, so big names other than Messi, Grealish, and Lukaku could still be on the move. We'll touch upon what else might happen before the transfer window slams shut, including where Harry Kane might end up and how that could affect the Premier League race. And speaking of the Premier League, that begins on Friday, so we'll spend most of the time that we're not discussing Messi, discussing and previewing this Premier League season. Also a reminder that we are on social media, so follow our personal accounts. I'm at Rusty_Gorlick. Rich is at Gorlick Rich. And this show also streams live on WWDBAM.com, and you can access prior shows on that website as well.
And, you know, we always start out the show with soccer birthdays. And before we get to that, because one of our favorite fans, maybe our not favorite fan and our special fan would resonate with this. It's Snoopy's birthday today. That, you know, Snoopy, if Snoopy were written in this era, would be a soccer fan first and
sure, yeah.
Not American sports. But happy birthday to Snoopy.
Happy birthday to Snoopy, a vital part of the morale of the show, I think. But soccer birthdays, first up, Bernardo Silva, the Portuguese international who plays attacking midfield and winger for Manchester City, turns 27. He's been linked with a move away from City in recent days after Pep Guardiola said that Silva wanted to leave.
Well, right, because Jack Grealish is taking his spot.
Yeah, Jack Grealish, they have Phil Foden, they have so many players.
4 minutes into the show, a Phil Foden mention record.
There you go.
We'll chronicle that.
Anyway, Silva began his career with Benfica. He moved to Monaco, where he won Ligue 1 with Mbappe, Fabinho, Falcao, and Thomas Lemar. And then he moved to Manchester City, where he has won 3 Premier Leagues, an FA Cup, and 4 Carabao Cups. And he has 59 caps for his country. Nice career for him so far. Up next, Roy Keane, the Irish international, former Manchester United player and captain, and one of the best and toughest midfielders ever, and he won't let you forget it, turns 50. He is the most successful Irish footballer of all time. He won 19 major trophies in his career, 17 of which came while he was at Manchester United. He played in 473 matches in his senior career, where he scored 57 goals, and he played in 326 matches with Manchester United from 1993 to 2005. He won 7 Premier League titles, 4 FA Cups, and 1 Champions League titles. one Champions League title, as well as numerous personal honors.
And the crack research team in bucolic and scenic Bucks County failed us because you can't answer the question I'm about to post to you. Who is the second most successful Irish player in football league history? Shea Given?
I was going to say Aidan McGeady, but probably
Aidan
not.
Aidan McGeady of Sunderland till I die?
I mean, I'm sure he's won a lot of Russian Premier Leagues when he played there.
Oh, I Shea Given, maybe, but we'll have to look this
Robbie
up.
Robbie Keane. Probably the right answer.
Could well be.
Yeah, or at least maybe not the most successful because he played for Tottenham, but could be probably the second best behind Roy Keane.
We just mentioned two toxic things for us almost in the same paragraph. Roy Keane, Arsenal's nemesis, and Tottenham, Arsenal's arch rival. So
yeah,
we're not starting out on a good footing today.
No, I don't think so. But finally, Javier Zanetti, the retired Argentine international who played fullback and defensive midfielder in his playing days, turns 48. He spent the bulk of his career from 1995 to 2014 with Inter Milan, where he played 615 matches and scored 12 goals.
I bet you he remembers every single one.
I was going to say, absolutely. He also played for the Argentine national team for 17 years, earning 145 caps and scoring 5 goals. He was on an Inter club that won 5 straight Serie A titles, 4 Coppa Italias, 1 FIFA Club World Cup, and 1 Champions League title. Only Gianluigi Buffon, Paolo Maldini, and Francesco Totti played in more matches in Serie A than Zanetti.
That is great company.
Yes, that is an all-star group right there, and a wonderful career for a great player.
That is absolutely true, and someone who must be good friends with Lionel Messi.
Oh, I'm sure, yes.
We'll get to a little bit later on, because, of course, everybody in Argentina knows one another,
yeah, sure.
Even if they're not the same age, not from the same city.
Well, I think they overlapped on the national team.
They probably did. Yeah, both had. It'll be interesting to see who's playing with Messi now and when Zanetti started. It could be that Messi's playing with the sons of some of the people Zanetti started out playing with. So moving on, we'd like to introduce, as we're getting into the season, a breakout player of the week or a breakthrough player of the week, someone you haven't heard from before. Rusty, who do you have this week? And you were excited about this guy when you were watching the match live.
Yes, so the first breakthrough player of the week, winner of the new club regular season, is Kamaldeen Sulemana, a 19-year-old winger from Rennes who scored on his Ligue 1 debut against Lens. This weekend, the Ghana international joined Rennes from Nordjylland in Denmark.
What?
Thank you. This summer, and he showed his skills all game long in his team's 1-1 draw with Lens, who that's a team that punched above their weight last season. I think they finished in the top half after getting promoted.
They did.
Sulemana completed 4 of 7 dribbles in 58 minutes in Sunday's game, as well as his goal. Another player to watch also made his Rennes debut after joining from Lens in the summer, 21-year-old Loic Badé, who is yet another young and highly rated French center back. Plus, Rennes have Eduardo Camavinga and Jeremy Doku, so that's definitely a team for you guys to pay attention to this season in Ligue 1.
So it was a 1-1 draw between Rennes and Lens, which means that they yawn and Lens.
I guess you could say that. Sure. Why not?
Well, I think I got the accents totally wrong. And meanwhile, get while the getting is good. So our second newest feature has been well received, the stat of the week. And for someone who says he's not good at math, you're very facile with all the numbers and actually you're pretty darn good with them. What is your stat of the week for us?
Well, I don't have to count the numbers and stuff like that, so it does come pretty easily. But this stat reflects Leicester City's stifling defense in their 1-0 Community Shield upset win over Manchester City on Saturday. So Ricardo Pereira, the starting right back for Leicester, made 8 tackles in the game, while Wilfred Ndidi and Youri Tielemans each made 5 in midfield. So basically what that means is that the midfield for Leicester City, plus if you're coming down the left wing for Manchester City, must have been very hard to play against, because those guys were winning the ball all game long. And when you consider that most possessions end on misplaced passes rather than tackles and lost duels like that, it is a lot of tackles that Pereira, Ndidi, and Tielemans made. And that was, I think, one of the keys to their win against Manchester City, who had 57% possession. And as you know, they love having a lot of the ball. So Leicester City did a great job to make things frustrating for them, and that is shown in the number of tackles they made.
Key thing for Leicester City this year, and we'll get to this, is to keep everybody healthy. They faded badly at the end of each of the last two seasons, falling out of Champions League play, and Didi was hurt for a bunch of last year. But they have as good a collection of midfielders who can clog up the middle and go box to box as anybody.
Yeah, and they just brought in Boubacari Soumaré, who will be another guy who can do that. So very good recruitment from Leicester City.
Absolutely.
Who've been doing that for years now. But Rich, it's time for your segment on endangered managers and managers who deserve recognition. We've been talking a little bit in recent weeks about what it looks like going into the new season. So what have you got for us before three of the top five leagues begin this weekend?
The season is starting, so the seats are heating up and fast. As for the world, I would imagine that the seat for Mauricio Pochettino is pretty hot, given all the firepower that he will have at his disposal at Paris Saint-Germain. If somehow PSG were to stumble out of the gate, you could imagine a scenario where the Qatari sovereign wealth fund sacks Poch and brings in Antonio Conte, who wanted to build something at Inter Milan, but Inter Milan has had such a financial debacle that Conte left pretty quickly after the season. That said, I think that Poch will not stumble. He made a name for himself coaching up younger players at Southampton and at Tottenham, and I think he'll do just fine. And he'll be happy to have another Rosario Argentina native join his club, as he was a star in Rosario at one point, and of course Lionel Messi was as well.
Yeah, two guys who started their careers at Newell's Old Boys.
That's right. That is absolutely the case. And that's focused on the Premier League, and here are my top five. Zisco at Watford. The reasoning is simple. Since the formation of the Premier League, an average of 1.5 clubs that just got promoted gets relegated the following year. Given the lack of patience of the Watford owners, the Pozzo brothers, if Watford were to get off to a poor start, despite all the great work Zisco did last year to get them promoted, because he came in after somebody was fired, and I forget who it was, Marco Silva comes to mind, but I don't think that's right. You could imagine a scenario where Zisco is out and someone like Sam Allardyce gets put in. It wouldn't necessarily be fair, but that's the brutal nature of the Premier League. The second is Mikel Arteta of Arsenal. Now, I put him higher on the list than some of the odds makers, and I like Arsenal's transfer activity as far as it's gone, and their defense as well, but their attack still has problems, and if they get off to a slow start, I could imagine that Arteta could be out. They still have too many guys on the roster, given that they don't have European play, and they still need to fill a few holes. They still need a backup keeper. They still need a right back. It would be nice to get another center midfielder. It would be good to, say, get a striker, because right now they have four or five, which means maybe they have none. Now, that's not all Arteta's doing, but, for example, some of his insistences in the past have flopped miserably, including Willian from Chelsea. The issue for Arsenal, though, from a human resources standpoint, is where do they go if they were to sack Arteta? They certainly botched it when they terminated Unai Emery, and they had poor Freddie Ljungberg, one of the greatest players in their history, with no support for about a month and a half. That may not repeat itself. Third is Steve Bruce at Newcastle, because he always seemingly is on a hot seat. So why not?
Yeah, although if they get Joe Willock, that might make his job a bit easier. Although I do not see Joe Willock being able to totally repeat the form he had at the end of last season.
No, because
that
the
was an outlier.
Right, the scouts will be on to him in the scouting reports. Now, one who could ratchet up quickly on this list is Ralf Hasenhüttl at Southampton. The club got off to a fast start last season. Everyone was singing his praises, and then was the worst team after the new year by some margin. He is perhaps the only manager in any league in modern history to manage his team to 2-9-0 defeats in consecutive seasons and still keep his job. So I would think that a poor start on the coast could doom his chances to remain.
Yeah, his job just got a lot harder because they sold Danny Ings and signed Adam Armstrong. Armstrong's a good striker, but he's just not proven in the Premier League, and they already had, you know, their problems last year.
He was second in goals scored in the championship, but as you have said on many occasions on this broadcast, that doesn't really mean a lot. Not everybody who has scored a lot of goals in the championship has repeated that feat. In the Premier League, it's a little tougher.
Yeah, just look at Alexander Mitrovic from Fulham. Look at Nea Mape from Brighton and Hove Albion for two examples right there. Other times you get a player like Ollie Watkins where it does translate, but it's not a guarantee.
It is not. And then finally, Bruno Lage of Wolves. And I'll admit I don't know a ton about him, but what I learned of him made me wonder where the body of work was to justify his being hired into the Premier League. I would have to believe that he will not have a long runway to show that he belongs in the league, especially if Wolves were to stumble because they're predicted to be a bottom half of the table team. What they want to be is, if they're in the bottom half, they don't want to be in the bottom five, because anything can happen if you're in the bottom five. So I think he'll be on a short rope in terms of having an opportunity. And the wild card out there is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, only because of the fact I think he's deserved his longer-term deal. I think he's done a wonderful job in a very difficult situation. Seems to be a fabulous guy. The players seem to like him. They keep on adding pieces. They still have some holes in that lineup. But given that they signed Sancho, given that Rafael Varane is about to get out of quarantine and join the team, those are two big pieces.
Huge.
And if they don't qualify for Champions League, or if they stumble where they're mid-table for a while, it could well be, if ownership thinks they have a chance to accelerate and they're, say, in 8th, 9th, 10th around December, he could be in trouble too.
Yeah, especially if Conte's still out there. He is obviously a great coach.
That's absolutely right. And, of course, Conte being out there is not helpful to a lot of these managers at big-time clubs.
So although Conte does tend to fight with his superiors, so you could have it be the type of thing where Ole gets fired and then is back in the same job like 6 months later because Conte's just made up
for
him that.
Then you're really talking the Mexican or Brazilian leagues where the memories of owners are very short. With that, there's been a lot of banter going on in social media and just in general in the football world lately, Rusty. So what is our soccer tweet or best quote of the week or weekend?
Yeah, so this one, we have a couple from some previous winners. So first up is Tom Werville of The Athletic on Twitter saying that, and I quote, "Getting in there early to say that Messi, Neymar, and Mbappe, sure, is M&M. And I personally will be watching this front three till I collapse," like the Eminem song, "Till I Collapse."
Well, or they can say, you know, how they have in the Philadelphia Union, the person who runs the most in a game, all those guys will go 8 miles for you.
If you look at their stats, it's probably not the case because they don't like to put pressure on the ball defensively, but maybe combined they'll all run 8 miles. No, I'm kidding.
Give me a little credit for cultural relevance.
No, that's good. That's good. Moving on, Carl Anka, also of The Athletic on Twitter, with a nice informative one about Barcelona's current situation. So he said, "With Messi on the books, Barcelona's wage-to-turnover ratio is 115%. If Messi decided to play for free, Barcelona's wage-to-turnover ratio is 95%. They're up the creek without a paddle." He continued, "Barcelona would not be able to register Messi even if he did play for free. That's how bad the accounts are. Why on earth they made 4 signings this summer? They really thought the rules would not apply."
And turnover is revenue, and they have to get down to, what, 70%?
I think
wage to revenue, which means they're going to be selling more players. So not only did ESPN make a bad bet on La Liga, Barcelona could end up out of Champions League play depending on how many players they have to sell. We were talking about this on the way over. If I am Edu Gaspar and I am Mikel Arteta, I go to the Krenkes and I said, you know how you gave us like $60 million to get Thomas Partey last summer at the end? Give us $200 million. Let us get Ansu Fati, Pedri, and
Aleix
Moriba.
They're all out of contract. After the season,
right. We could probably sign them up each for, say, 60,000 euros a week, which, given how good they are, could be a bargain, especially Pedri. Mm-hmm. If Fati has to stay healthy. But I would do that.
Yeah, the issue is for Barcelona, you have your 3 best young players are all out of contract after this season. And then you have a lot of guys who are talented players but have not shown it, like Ousmane Dembele. Sergio Aguero didn't have the best season last year. Who knows if he'll even be allowed to play? Who else? Griezmann hasn't been great. And Coutinho also. So you have a lot of guys who need to prove themselves but might be over the hill.
And that registration issue is key because Memphis Depay could be a good frontliner for them, but they probably can't register the 4 guys they signed only because they have to really get that wage bill down. So it's really a messy situation at Camp Nou right now.
Pun intended, messy situation.
Well, oh my God, no, not pun intended, but probably subconscious speech.
Yeah, I think, and if they can register Depay, I think it's really going to be hard for them this season because he had 20 goals in Ligue 1 and 12 assists, I believe. if I remember correctly.
He had a wonderful year.
Yeah, he had a wonderful year, and that's one of the closest players you could get to replicate Messi's production. You're not going to, but he at least gets you a lot closer. Maybe gets you half to three quarters of what Messi can do. And then if you don't have that, things are going to get even harder than they already are when you're losing the best player of all time. But anyway, games of the week, Rich, you do your homework. It's basically the soccer equinox because we have MLS going on, NWSL, and then the top European leagues are starting. So there is a lot to pick from. So what do you have for us for this week?
So we're broadcasting this today, Tuesday. Wednesday, UEFA Super Cup action. The winner of the Champions League plays the winner of the Europa League. So Chelsea plays Villarreal in the likely soccer haven of Belfast, Northern Ireland.
Sure.
And then Thursday, perhaps the biggest match in the Philadelphia Union's history, the first of two games against Club America in the CONCACAF Champions League, the semifinals, this one on the road in Mexico City, starting at 10 p.m. You'll find all the action on Fox Sports 1, and we will be watching. Friday, the start of the Bundesliga, featuring perennial title favorite Bayern Munich traveling to Borussia Mönchengladbach.
You could see American right back Joe Scally make his competitive debut.
Absolutely. A lot has been said about him in the Twitter sphere. While the Premier League kicks off with Arsenal taking a bus across town to play at newly promoted Brentford in their beautiful new stadium. And La Liga kicks off with, of all matches, Valencia hosting Getafe. Not necessarily.
Could have been Huesca Elche. I don't even know if either of them are still in the league. But
right,
still.
It could have been. And then Saturday, lots of good stuff. Wake up at 7:30 a.m. Eastern. Manchester United hosts Leeds United in what could be a track meet. No, that's Marcus Rashford for Man U. He's out for about 6 weeks. He just had shoulder surgery today. At 10 a.m., Chelsea hosts new look Crystal Palace. And that's a tough opener for Crystal Palace, while Leicester City hosts Wolves. Defending champion Lille hosts Nice in Ligue 1 action at 11.
So the Christophe Galtier derby.
Right. He coached Lille to the championship and now manages Nice.
Yeah.
While newly promoted Norwich City has a tall task at hand when they host Liverpool at 12:30. And then Borussia Dortmund and Erling Haaland host Eintracht Frankfurt also at 12:30. While PSG hosts Strasbourg at 3 o'clock, Lionel Messi will not be in the lineup. And then Deportivo Alaves hosts Real Madrid at 4 p.m., and if you have any gas left in the tank, there are plenty of MLS and Mexican League matches at night. So we move on to Sunday. Angers hosts Lyon at 7 a.m. Eastern in Ligue 1 action. And then Newcastle hosts West Ham at 9 a.m. And then American Jesse Marsh makes his Bundesliga debut at 9:30 as his RB Leipzig squad visits Mainz. While the match of the weekend could well be at 11:30 a.m. when Tottenham Hotspur, apparently with Harry Kane in the starting lineup, according to his manager Nuno Espirito Santo, hosts league favorite Manchester City with new signee Jack Grealish. Defending La Liga champion Atletico Madrid opens its campaign at the same time at Celta Vigo, while at 2 p.m. Barcelona, and who the heck's in their lineup, anybody will guess, will play its first match in 17 seasons without Lionel Messi on the roster as they host a tough Real Sociedad squad. And there are hosts of Mexican League and MLS matches later in the day. And then on Monday, not many matches, but the best of them is defending Europa League winner Villarreal. They host Granada in La Liga action. So with that, Rusty, again, it's heating up, and there's plenty to watch, almost without a break, because we had the Olympics before then. We had, you know, Copa America. We had the European Championships. We had Champions League, yada, yada. Global Roundup we're going to, and we usually talk about leagues. We usually don't dedicate a subsection to one person and the ramifications of his travels, but in this case, you have to start us off before we get to our preview. So give us about, say, 5 minutes or so on Lionel Messi.
Sure. Well, we are going to be talking about Ligue 1, just not the games that happened. Basically, to summarize, nothing too crazy happened. There are a couple of comebacks in the Lille and in another game. But anyway, we have
Ligue 1 and Minnows. We have one story to talk about.
So, La Liga is not allowing Lionel Messi to return to FC Barcelona because their finances are so awful. So as a result, Messi is free to go anywhere he wants, and it's pretty much been confirmed that he is going to sign a deal with the most obvious candidate, which is star-studded PSG, which now boasts more firepower than the militaries of most countries in the world. Messi's departure from Barcelona and his joining PSG has tons of sub-stories and layers, so we'll get into a few of them, starting with the biggest losers of them all, FC Barcelona. So as you said, it's the first time in 17 years that Messi will not be in a Barcelona jersey. He was the leading goal scorer and assist man last season, as well as just the club's leader in the locker room. He had 30 goals and 9 assists in the league, 38 and 12 in all competitions. So Barcelona made a great run last season, almost captured the La Liga title, and they will have the challenge to replace him, and it will be hard for any team to do that. They do have Memphis Depay, who is probably the closest that they can get to replacing him like for like, but they don't even know if they'll be able to register the players they already signed this window for free, which include Depay as well as Eric Garcia and Sergio Aguero. So without Messi and without a suitable replacement or two, plus a few younger players stepping up, it is possible that Barcelona could drop out of the top four and the Champions League for next season. That said, the club does have some very good young players who are ready to step up. Pedri, Riqui Puig, Elias Mariba, healthy Ansu Fati, the guys we were talking about earlier, many of whom are out of contract after this season. So new signing Depay had 22 goals and 12 assists for Lyon last season in all competitions, which is decent when you compare it to Lionel Messi.
He was great.
He was great, yeah. But the problem is, can they even register him? And if you can't register Memphis Depay, and obviously you don't have Lionel Messi, things get difficult.
Right.
So that's one of the challenges. All is not bleak for FC Barcelona. They need to shave off the wage budget, but they do have young players. And they have a lot of players who are talented but need to prove themselves.
And it could well be that they shave off the expensive contracts, they do a fire sale, and then they just go with the kids. And even if they go with the kids, they have a lot of kids who are very good. They have no risk of relegation. They probably could qualify for Europe. Because some of these kids are really good. But then the question, as you said, is who's signed for next season? So who is the second biggest loser after Barcelona?
Well, the second biggest loser is La Liga. So they lost Cristiano Ronaldo 2 years ago. They now have lost Messi. And those players fill up seats everywhere they go, and they get viewers on television. There's a sense, and we have felt it, to watch Messi, you know, anytime we can when he's at the highest level. On top of that, it seems that people in Spain root for a big club, either Barcelona or Real Madrid, and then their local club too. Everyone seems to sort of have a hand in that rivalry, especially when Messi and Ronaldo were there. So what does Messi do? What does the loss of Messi do for ticket sales when Barcelona is the visiting team? What does it do for the league generally? It's really just not good for La Liga. And then by proxy, it's not good for ESPN. We would have thought ESPN did a victory lap when they wrestled La Liga's coverage rights in the U.S. away from beIN Sports. They also suffered a self-inflicted wound when they did not hire the duo Phil Shane and Ray Hudson to broadcast the matches, because those guys are great.
Wonderful.
And now they're gonna suffer even more because, you know, they ran the financial models about how much money they could make off of La Liga, and those models assumed that Messi was going to be a huge draw for the viewers.
Had to.
That's the reason you get La Liga. You buy these rights for the best players because those are the reasons we watch. Anyway. We wonder if there are clauses in this contract that ratchet down the payments to La Liga. Were there to be a season-ending injury to Messi or his departure from the league? Probably not. That would be a tough thing to negotiate. But ESPN are definitely going to see a loss in the returns of what they thought they would be getting from this deal. Smart Business suggests that ESPN did include that clause, but we do not have a window into those negotiations and whether leagues even entertain adjustments for occurrences like that. It's a story worth watching, but even if ESPN gets some money back, they will still lose when they have a La Liga without Messi.
Well, and Chu, as we want to get to our English Premier League preview, beIN Sports kind of in a weird way won, right? They lost La Liga, they kept Ligue 1, and they lose Messi, but they keep Messi because Messi moves to France, and you know, the French clubs were in a crisis because no provider wanted to pay for TV rights, and Amazon Prime has rights to a lot of games, so score Amazon Prime 1, ESPN nothing. For this battle that wasn't even a battle. It's kind of dumb luck.
What a great underdog fairy tale. The winners being PSG and Amazon Prime. You gotta love it. But PSG, you know, they're the big winners here. They were already going to be great this season before they got Messi with all the other work they did in the offseason. Yeah, Gianluigi Donnarumma in goal. Achraf Hakimi is the right wing back. Jorginho Wijnaldum is the box-to-box midfielder. Sergio Ramos on the back line. All but one of those players were on free transfers. It might have been already the best transfer window of all time.
It sounds like a Marvel Comics movie.
Yeah, you get two of the best young players, probably the two best young players in their positions, Gianluigi Donnarumma as a goalkeeper, Ashraf Hakimi as a right back. You get two widely veterans who have won Champions Leagues and Sergio Ramos and Jorginho Wijnaldum. And now you're bringing in Lionel Messi, the best player of all time. He's still got it.
And the guys who are behind, who you have left behind, you have on defense, Marquinhos, Pascal Kimpembe. You have, of course, Neymar and Mbappe. I mean,
Di Maria, Paredes, Verratti, Danilo Pereira.
It's not fair.
You can keep going. Julian Draxler is like their sixth attacker.
So now they're co-favorites to win Champions League along with Manchester City.
And that's according to the bookmakers, right?
Right, that's according to the bookmakers, which means, speaking of Manchester City, that now we are on to, in 25 minutes or so, our Premier League preview, and we're going to ask questions. So we're going to start out with the obvious one. Rusty, who is your favorite to win the league?
For me, it's Manchester City. They just have too much depth and too much firepower. What do you think?
Well, they won it by 12 points last season, and now they added Jack Grealish. So I would say that with that, even though Chelsea added Romelu Lukaku, it's not enough to forward that gap. It's Manchester City to me. So favorites to finish in the top four, which is what goes with that, is a Champions League berth. Who are your top four and in what order?
So in order, it'll be Manchester City, Chelsea, and then I'm going to go with Liverpool and then Manchester United. I think those four are clearly the top four on paper in the league. I think they'll show that on the pitch this season, and I don't think any teams will come close to them.
I agree that they're the top four. I totally disagree that no teams will come close to them. Mm-hmm. I think Liverpool could stumble because they're older and teams will be figuring out gegenpressing. I don't love their midfield, especially with that Wijnaldum, because I don't think that they have a replacement. And don't tell me it's James Milner. And I also think United, you never know. They're a Paul Pogba eruption away from some catastrophe. And I also think if Bruno Fernandes gets worn out and they don't develop Donny van de Beek, they could have some problems, and there's some teams behind them that could see the opportunity. But generally speaking, they're four solid favorites there. So moving on, can Manchester City win the league without a top striker? And with Aguero going to Barcelona, even though he was hurt most of the year, can they win the league without a top number nine?
Yeah, I mean, they did last year. I don't see why they can't do it again this year. I think they will do it again this year, because if you have a bunch of players who are pretty well rested and not playing every single game, that will go a long way, especially with such a hectic schedule from this summer and all of that that's going on. So I think Manchester City will be able to win without a top striker. I just think it always helps if you have a guy who you can count on for 25 goals in a season.
Right, and they don't have that, but it's not as, say, dire in quotes as it was for Chelsea, whose leading scorer last season had 7 goals. It was Jorginho, and they were all on penalty takes.
Yeah, I mean, it worked out for them in the Champions League, though.
it certainly did. Can Liverpool, with Virgil van Dijk restored to good health, and Ibrahima Konate joining him on the back line, and players now back to the regular position, such as Jordan Henderson, can they win the league? And is that possible, given that they won it 2 seasons ago and then dropped off?
I think they can, but a lot has to go right. I think you need to figure out how to get the best out of Trent Alexander-Arnold, because I think teams are starting to target him on defense and learn how to sort of mitigate his crossing ability on offense. I think you need to figure out your best midfield combination. It could end up being Thiago, Fabinho, and Trent Alexander-Arnold is your best midfield combination. And then you play someone else at right back. I don't know who that would be.
And don't forget, Andy Robertson's hurt, too.
He hurt his
ankle, tore some ligaments. He's out for a little bit at left back.
Okay, that also makes things harder. But I think both Salah and Mane had complete summers. They got the full offseason to rest, which is going to be really important for them. I think they'll have to get back to the form where they tied for winning the Golden Boot with Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang a few years ago. They're going to have to be that good. They each scored 22 goals that year. And, yeah, that's going to have to go right. Roberto Firmino's going to have to return to his form that he was in when they won the Champions League. It demands a lot of all these players.
Thiago's going to have to be healthy and play the way they expected him to, because since coming over from Bayern Munich, his numbers have been a disappointment. Now, whether injured or not, they didn't get from Thiago Alcantara what they thought they were going to get.
Yeah, they need to figure out how best to use him, especially in a midfield with Fabinho, who plays the 6, et cetera. So Klopp has a lot of decisions to make, has to figure a lot of things out. but I like their you know, talent.
Can Chelsea pick up where they left off, that terrific Champions League run and title, and under a full year under Thomas Tuchel, can they win the Premier League, especially now that they've added one of my favorites, Romelu Lukaku?
They can. They certainly can. They have a ton of talent. I don't know where the Jules Koundé deal stands at the moment, because that's been rumored this summer.
They could use a center back.
They could use a center back, but I think with their structure, everything is made easier on the defense because they keep a lot of guys back. They keep it tight. They're not going to score 5 goals on a team. But yeah, I really like the way they play. Tuchel makes it simple for the players. I think they can win the Premier League, but for any of these teams, a lot has to go right.
Well, they also have apparently a new right wing back from Hershey, Pennsylvania, Christian Pulisic, who is playing right wing back.
God.
I think they have to straighten out their roster. They have 37 people right now on the senior team. There will be a lot of loan activity between now and the end of August.
Yeah, they'll need to get rid of at least 10 players.
Exactly. So going cross country. Is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer the right manager for Manchester United, and can they win the title now that they have added Rafael Varane to pair with Harry Maguire on the back line and Jadon Sancho on the right wing?
Yeah, I think all the top four teams, I think, have a pretty good shot of winning the title. I think it's going to be a war between those four teams, and it's anyone's guess as to who wins it. As I said, I like City, but with Jadon Sancho, he's just such an electrifying player. You need to know where he is at all times. You need to pay lots of attention to him when he's on the ball. He can carve up a defense and drag defenders out of position, find his teammates, he can score, and then Rafael Varane has won everywhere he's gone. Real Madrid, I think he's won 4 Champions Leagues. He's won a World Cup. You can't teach that type of experience, that type of winning gene.
I agree. You make a compelling case. My big problems are they still have question marks at goalkeeper. Yeah. They need Luke Shaw to put together 2 seasons in a row. Aaron Wan-Bissaka hasn't necessarily emerged as an elite player at right back. I also think they have a donut hole at striker. They're going to rely on 34-year-old Edinson Cavani because Anthony Martial hasn't emerged, and they don't want to play Mason Greenwood there. They have an issue there.
They do.
And I think other teams have exploited it, and they can be as great as they want on the wings, but they really need that finisher. And I just don't think Cavani is at 34 durable enough to hold up through the various cups and Champions League and a grueling Premier League season. And if they don't trust Martial, they should have made a move in the offseason.
Yeah, they need to stay healthy in order to stay in the top four, because with teams like Chelsea and Manchester City, they have so much more depth. So a lot has to go right for United, but I like their attack. I think they have a bunch of guys who can score like 10 goals this season.
They definitely could. Now, is there some way for Leicester City to crack the top four after 2 bad fades at the end of each of the last 2 seasons where they just fell out of contention? Very heartbreaking for them. Can they do it?
I think it would be, if they do, it's going to be more of a reflection on one of the top four teams dropping off than it will be Leicester playing well. I think they have a certain ceiling. I don't think that they're going to fall as drastically as they did last season, especially with the additions of Patson Daka and Boubacar Soumaré and Ryan Bertrand. But I don't think that they have nearly the top-level talent to stay with teams like Manchester United, Manchester City, and Chelsea, and Liverpool. They just don't have those world-class players. But again, if things go right for them and go wrong for some of those top four teams, you never know.
Right. It's certainly a puzzle that Brendan Rodgers, who's an outstanding manager, as he proved at Celtic, he wasn't awful at Liverpool despite some criticisms for the ending days of his tenure there, and certainly has done a nice job at Leicester City, but they won the FA Cup, and trophies are nothing to sneeze at. Just ask any Tottenham fan. I think that they certainly could end up fifth, and that's where many are putting them. But who will finish in fifth through seventh to qualify for European play that's not Champions League play? So you have Europa League, and then the European Conference League. Who are the likely candidates to finish fifth through seventh?
I think it'll be Leicester, definitely. And then I'm going to go with Arsenal, because I think they'll have a good defense, and I think their attack will at least slightly improve from last year. And then if Spurs keep Harry Kane, they'll qualify for Europe. But if they sell Kane, they're going to have to replace his production. That's not going to be easy. So they'll probably have to sign Dusan Vlahovic and another attacker to replace Kane, and I don't know if everyone will gel quickly. So if Spurs drop out, I think it will be Leeds, actually, who finish in that final European spot, because I don't think that the likes of West Ham, Leeds or Aston Villa, it'll be either Leeds or Aston Villa if Spurs drop out, because I don't like any of, not Leicester, Everton, Wolves, Southampton, all the teams who could be competing for that spot. I think that there are too many reasons not to like them. And yeah, West Ham is one of those teams who I don't think.
Will Harry Kane remain at Tottenham Hotspur?
Oh, the 100 million pound question. I have no idea. I think he will not, or at least if he does, he won't be playing the way he did last season, because I think he clearly wants to leave. If he didn't show up at training on the day he said he was going to show up, that's a huge red flag to me for any player, especially.
Well, he says he did show up on the day he was going to show up. It was just a week later than everybody else did.
Well, then why was it a story? Why did Tottenham come out and say that they agreed with it?
I don't know.
I didn't read that. I didn't hear about it. I'm sure if they did say it, they would have. It would have been.
Well, I think without Harry Kane, there's a hole in their production. He was the Golden Boot winner.
Top assist man.
So there's a lot of missing production, which to try to fill that hole in 3 weeks is very difficult.
Yes.
Could be very expensive. And you remember when they sold Gareth Bale 8 years ago, they sold him early enough that they had time. Pieces didn't work out.
Well, they knew they were going to sell him early enough. They waited to get it done until the last day because Daniel Levy is not easy to negotiate with.
But, and then they signed people who didn't work out.
Yeah, they signed people who didn't work out. I think the key is, if you look at what Aston Villa are doing with Jack Grealish, they got Leon Bailey, Emi Buendia, and Danny Ings. Two of those guys are Premier League proven, Buendia and Ings. And
well,
then you get a guy. Well, Buendia created
Buendia
the most
was
chances.
Not good when they got promoted 2 years ago.
He was not a good goal scorer.
Okay.
He was a very good assister. I think he created in the top five most chances created for that Norwich team, which was not very good. So he was the one bright spot. So I think if he can do that with that Norwich team, he'll be a lot better with this Aston Villa team. Also, they got Leon Bailey, who's a very nice player. So I think you need to get guys who are more proven and, you know, fit a system, and who are actually good and have been heard of. I don't think you can sign, say, 7, 10 to $15 million players to replace $100 million player.
Well, they were rumored to be in for Lautaro Martinez, but other reports say Martinez wants his next move to be to Spain. Mm. And then, of course, Arsenal was in for him as well. And Inter Milan has to keep somebody. So that would be a good start, but he's a scorer, not an assister. So that remains to be seen who's going to set up Heung-min Son, who's very good and got a lot of assists from deeper balls from Kane. So can Spurs improve under Nuno Espirito Santo, their third manager in 3 seasons, or fourth even?
No, I don't. Well, okay. So I don't like the way Nuno Espirito Santo has his teams play, and I do not think that it is going to get the most out of this Tottenham team. I think they should be, you know, a little bit more high octane. They should be using the likes of Lucas Moura more than they have.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I just feel like he
single-handedly got them into the Champions League final a couple seasons ago with those goals against Ajax, and then all of a sudden Josie didn't use him, which was crazy. The guy was ascending. He was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I think we might still be giving him a little bit too much credit for those goals. I mean, it was impressive, obviously, don't get me wrong. But I think, you know, he hasn't necessarily built on that with the chances he has gotten. But in terms of what he can do regularly, he's very fast and great for counterattacking, and he's good on the ball. You might as well use him, even though he's not going to be single-handedly lifting your team every single game like he did in that Ajax game. But one, it shows he can do that. And two, it just shows he's a confident player who can bring it when you want him to. And especially in a counterattacking system like Mourinho's, you might as well have used him.
Well, and they didn't. And then, of course, Tanguy Ndombele has been a bust, and he didn't start in the match against Arsenal. People were wondering, well, if you don't have Christian Eriksen and Ndombele can't step up, where's the service coming from at attacking midfield? And don't say Ali Skip and don't say Harry Winks. And
could be Lo Celso, could be Dele
Alli. Box to box. They'll need Dele Alli.
Yeah, Lo Celso definitely showed flashes in Copa America with Argentina. He had some good through balls, but he just has never been able to really do that consistently.
Question is if he's a regular. So moving on from Tottenham Hotspur, and I think the answer, I'm going to answer this, no. They haven't done enough in the transfer window. Brian Hill from, where is he coming from?
From Sevilla.
Sevilla is a kid. And Cristiano Romero is coming from an Atalanta team that in a lot of goals, and it's a big signing. Yeah. But they're going to take a little while to develop.
Yeah, I like Romero. He won the Copa America with Argentina. He was in that squad. I think he started in the final. But yeah, it's going to take a lot for him to adjust. It's a different league from Serie A. Gil is going to take a long time to adjust too. He's pretty skinny and going to take a while to adjust to the physicality, especially as a winger. Romero, it's going to be a different system. He's actually going to have center backs who stay next to him instead of run way up the field like with Atalanta.
The question is how well those center backs can move.
Yeah, I think Romero is a good signing, but again, it's going to take time, and they still have so many holes in that team, especially if Kane leaves.
So moving forward to Arsenal, they had the third best record of the Premier League last season after Christmas and the league's third best defense for the entire season. Have they done anything to improve their attack, which at times was predictable, if not dreadful, last season? Who will create the chances, and who will score the goals?
Well, on paper, no, they have not done anything to improve the attack. Things looked better at the end of last season, so basically it's a hope is the strategy for Arsenal fans, and as you say, hope is never a strategy.
Well, if the younger players, if Bukayo Saka, Emile Smith-Rowe, even Nicola Pepe's not that old, and if they play Gabriel Martinelli.
Yeah.
Well, that could be an offseason in and of itself, and that all these players emerge, but that's counting on a lot of people to really step up.
Yeah, a lot of people to step up, and it's putting a lot of weight on young players' shoulders. I think the guys like Smith around soccer ready to take it on, and Pepe looked so much better at the end of last season than he did, you know, since he joined the club. He really put it together over the last month or month and a half of the season. So that's encouraging if you're an Arsenal player. You have to get the most of Nicola Pepe. That's the hope for this season because he really was impressive. You need to figure out what to do at striker because Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang had an awful year last year, unacceptable for someone of his price tag who's your team's captain. Probably should not be the captain, but that's a whole other thing.
Lacazette,
I'm unconvinced, have not been convinced about him for a while. So you really have to figure out what the best combination of players is, how to position them in order to get the most out of them. And yeah, you need to sell players too. You need to sell Willian. You need to sell probably Lacazette, maybe Aubameyang.
And with Thomas Partey out now for maybe a couple of months, you have to rely on Granit Xhaka again in midfield. And we've been singing this groaning song for how many years that you can't be elite with Granit Xhaka. Now, he had a heck of a match and maybe the best match he ever played in his entire life for Switzerland against France in the round of 16 in the European Championships where Switzerland knocked them out. But then, of course, in a typical Xhaka fashion, on card accumulation, he was suspended for the next match and Switzerland went out. This is the tale of Xhaka. Give a little bit, get a little bit, but not match to match.
And let me explain why he thrived so much in that match against France. Both teams were knackered because they had gone to extra time, I think, in the previous matches. They were both very tired. The match itself went, this one, the France-Switzerland one, went to extra time. And both teams were playing a very wide open end-to-end game for all 120 minutes. That means you get a lot of space in midfield, and Xhaka thrives when he has plenty of space to get the ball onto his left foot and send a long pass, which is exactly what that game needed. But in a league like the Premier League, when everyone is fully rested and teams don't like to make mistakes, you're never going to get that much space in midfield, and that's not going to suit Xhaka. In a league like Serie A with Roma, he'd get more of that space in midfield, but we've been saying for so long he needs so much space to thrive, and it's just been the same thing over and over for the past years with him. He's been okay at some points, but he doesn't cover enough ground. He's one-footed, not good in tight spaces, not quick. So there you go. That's, I think, why he was so good in that game. And you can't judge a player off one game.
Right. I just think that they're relying upon him again. It's a donut hole in their midfield, and they will go as far or not. depending on how much A, they have to rely on him, and B, how well or not the younger players play
and
this year.
And how healthy Sambi and Partey stay and who else steps up.
Right. And as I alluded to earlier, Rust, an average of 1.5 clubs that just got promoted gets relegated each season. So we're going to the other end of the table. The three clubs that got promoted were Norwich City, Watford, and Brentford. Which club has the best chance of staying up, and which of the clubs not just promoted is among the favorites for relegation?
So I'll answer the second question first. I think it's Burnley, just because they're pretty dreadful to watch. They don't score a lot of goals. Their defense, I think, will get found out. And I think that this is the year the Sean Dyche magic runs out.
I'll say Crystal Palace, only because they've had so much tumult. Mm-hmm. They had more than a dozen players out of contract. They've added some good young players. They changed their manager. So much change so quickly. Poor Will Zaha, good player, good guy. I think that they're going to struggle. Now, how about who gets of the teams that just got promoted? Say you had to pick two that will get relegated and one that'll stay up. Who do you got?
The one that's staying up is going to be Brentford, because I think they're a well-coached team. They have a lot of versatile players. They have a pretty deep squad, and I think that will help them in terms of the slog of the season. Getting toward the end of it, they'll have a lot of guys with fresh legs, I think. And I think they also can play multiple formations. They played a 3-4-1-2, 3-4-3, 4-3-3, so that helps. Especially when going up against different teams who are better. I think Norwich and Watford are the most likely to go down. I don't even know who Watford have added this summer. They still have Ismaila Sarr. They still have João Pedro, who are two very nice young players. But beyond that, it's nothing really to write home about. Zisco's a good manager, but as you've said, the Pazos, the owners, can be crazy. So I think, and Norwich, my issue with Norwich, I really want Norwich to succeed, but my issue with them is that the two marquee attackers that they brought in, and Josh Sargent and Milo Rashica, both played for Werder Bremen, which was the least attacking team in the Bundesliga last season. So you're bringing in players who are not used to, who are attackers, but they're not used to attacking. They haven't put up the numbers. So that
is a big
risk.
But their manager, Daniel Farke at Norwich, likes to turn it loose.
He does like to turn it loose, but you are sort of betting on an unknown quantity. I guess that's why they were able to afford those players, because they were unknown quantities. I hope Josh Sargent can really put it together this season. He'll be training with Timu Pukki, who's a very good striker and has made the most of his abilities. So it's a lot of risks and a lot that has to go right for Norwich. And for Watford, I just am not confident.
Yeah, it's not as clear this year as it was last season, where almost everybody thought Leeds was going to have a mid-table finish.
Yeah.
This season, it strikes me from all the reading I've done that there's somewhat of a consensus that these three clubs will be clustered around 17, 18, and 19, and one of them will emerge. And Brentford seems right now to be the popular choice. I, for sentimental reasons, among others, am going to take Norwich City. So with that, Rusty, as we go forward, we have a few more questions because we've talked about the teams. What else strikes you about this season in terms of what to expect?
So I think Everton is an interesting team to look at because of their whole managerial situation. They just brought in Rafa Benitez, who used to manage Liverpool and won a Champions League with Liverpool, has said, I guess, disparaging things about Everton and their fans and previous years. They have a decent core group of players in Richarlison, who will be exhausted after playing in both Copa America and the Olympics this summer. They have Luca Dean, they have Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who had a really nice season last year, Jordan Pickford, who's going to be riding high off the Euros. Moise Kean returns from a good loan at PSG, but he never, you know, put it together at Everton under Carlo Ancelotti, which is the reason he joined. So that's a question to ask. And in terms of their additions this summer, they have been absolutely uninspiring. They've got Damari Gray, who is English, which I guess helps.
Right, because of the Brexit, you need eight English players on your roster.
Beyond that, he has accomplished not much in his career. He's been a perennial bench player. They brought in another similar winger who's a lot older in Andros Townsend.
Who had that wonderful goal, though, years ago against Manchester City or Liverpool to knock somebody.
Something like that.
Liverpool to knock them out, and Manchester City won the title, right?
Yeah.
But that was it.
I vaguely remember what you're talking about, but that's the only thing I even vaguely remember about Andros Townsend's career. They brought in Asmir Begovic, who's a nice guy, but he's a backup goalkeeper on a free transfer. They didn't add a lot of quality. They need to get better than they were last year.
Need to stay healthy, too.
They need to stay healthy because a lot of their players didn't. They have a decent midfield, but a lot has to go right. James Rodriguez, he said after Ancelotti left that he's basically a bit sad and feels kind of betrayed and lost because that was the reason he went to Everton. So it's going to be tough for them. Also, another team who I think is going to drop off based on or compared to how they performed last season is West Ham. They played way above expectations. They brought in Alphonse Areola, who I guess will push Lucas Fabianski. But beyond that...
That wasn't their problem.
That was not their problem. And beyond that, they have made some just not... They have not made the requisite deals they've had to make. They still have no backup for Mikael
Antonio. Which is crazy.
That's crazy. That's insanity right there. They did not permanently sign Jesse Lingard, who scored 9 goals in the second half of the season.
So he's back on the bench at United, where God knows what playing time he'll get.
Exactly, and he would have been a really nice asset for them. Most importantly, though, they need a striker. The only players they've brought in are Areola and a 31-year-old Craig Dawson.
We still have 3 weeks to go. So my guess is there's going to be an acceleration. There's going to be a bit some picking and up from Barcelona. There's going to be some acquisitions from Ligue 1. And we mentioned names like Dusan Vlahovic, but the later it gets, other teams have relied upon the players they have. So you really need to make compelling offers. I agree with you.
It's hard after the pandemic.
Right. I think with Lingard, without Lingard, it's not going to be as good a season for West Ham. I think they played out of their minds last season. All credit to them, but they didn't build on it.
Yeah, they did not. And then if you go to a team like, say, Brighton and Hove Albion, they play really nice football. But for them, they haven't gotten the striker that they need in order to elevate themselves out of the relegation battle and into mid-table. So
I'm still convinced, by the way, that among them, Graham Potter, Gareth Southgate, and Michael Phelps are kind of the same person.
Sure. Similar demeanors. I can see that. But yeah, now Mape way undershot his expected goals last season. Brighton, they
need a proper number 9.
Yeah, I saw them rumored with Darwin Nunez of Benfica.
Yeah, that would be good.
Earlier this summer, I saw that they were in for Patson Daka, who ended up with Leicester, who will be fighting for playing time with two other good strikers there. So, yeah, there's a lot of transfers that need to be done by some of these Premier League teams if they want to survive and if they want to survive easily. Brighton, West Ham, those are probably the two main teams. It's going to be tough for those teams if they don't make those additions.
And sometimes there are big last day signings. It happens. So what's your expectation? The biggest name yet to move who will move is fill in the blank.
Ooh, good question. Harry Kane is one of them. Joe Willock, I think, will get his move to Newcastle United.
Who from Barcelona might move that will surprise you?
See, that's the thing. All these players are on such huge wages that it's going to be hard for any team that's not one of the super rich to sign them. I can't see any of the super rich making those additions. But I guess if someone had to leave, it would probably be Martin Braithwaite because he's the most affordable.
Well, and he goes to West Ham.
Perhaps. That would work out.
Match made in heaven.
He had a good Euro 2020. So there you go. Anyway, I'm Rusty.
I'm Rich. We'd like to thank our engineer, the man behind the glass, Brett Kronberger, for all of his help.
And thank you for listening, and have a great day.
Thanks.